Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Kyle Glazer, Ben Badler joining you on a Baseball America Prospect podcast. We're a pretty fun podcast today because we're excited to talk about, we are announcing our 2018 Minor League Player of the Year. We have a lot of awards, but this is one of the, I would guess you could say the granddaddy of them all. This goes back to 1981. We've had a lot of great players really over the years win this award going back, including Dwight Gooden in 83 with just an absolutely incredible minor league season. Frank Thomas, so we have a Hall of Famer now. Manny Ramirez, Derek Jeter, Andrew Jones, Paul Konerko, Josh Beckett, Joe Mauer, Alex Gordon, yeah, Matt Wieters, Mike Trout. That's a pretty good one.
Kind of a big one.
Yeah, that's kind of a biggie. Chris Bryant, Blake Snell, who is, you know, in the running very strongly in the running for AL Cy Young this year. Last year, Ronald Acuna, who is very much in the running for Rookie of the Year this year. So a lot of great honorees. And to be honest, the decision this year, and you're probably listening to this thinking, it was probably a pretty easy one, and it was. So, Ben, who is our 2018 Minor League Player of the Year?
None other than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like you said, I don't think there was a very long meeting on that one, or much surprise that he won this one for us.
No, I think this is actually, I've been part of these meetings. My first Minor League Player of the Year meeting was 2002, Rocco Baldelli. I think this was the easiest one. You know, we've had some easy ones, but I think this one, to summarize, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at age 19, playing in AA and AAA, led the minor leagues in batting average, flirting with the .400 season, led the minor leagues in slugging percentage, was third in the minor leagues in on-base percentage, an honor that last year he was second in the minors in on-base percentage and only didn't win it because Yandy Diaz, who didn't have the necessary plate appearances, had a high enough one that even when you ruled 622B, I think it is, you know, he won it. But it was, you know, 20. It was 20 home runs. It was an outstanding season. But Ben, you've been talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for a very long time now. For someone who's not very old, you know, going back, you kind of been hearing about him for a long time. Kind of take us through, kind of if you would, kind of Vlad's progression to this point.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, a lot of times you start when the kid is, I think I saw Vlad the first time when he was 14 years old, just a 14-year-old kid, not wearing any batting gloves like his dad. But, I mean, in his case, he almost had to start like when he was like a really, really small child, just tagging along with his dad around the different minor league, or excuse me, two different major league parks when he was a little kid, and training, not necessarily training with his uncle, but you know, his uncle Wilton, who obviously was a former big leaguer, and Vlad Sr. have like a league back home in the Dominican Republic, and you know, Vlad would always be playing in that league, and he'd always be playing against older competition, and he'd be, you know, 13, 14 years old or 11 years old and playing against these grown men. And from a very early age, he stood out for his bat. You know, you can see the body type he has now. That was basically the body type that he's always had. For the most part, he's always been a big, heavy set kind of guy. And, you know, when he was training in his uncle Wilton's program, he was an outfielder, couldn't really run, couldn't really throw. So you're thinking, all right, here's this left fielder, first baseman, and you really got to believe in the bat. And, you know, obviously after signing, he changed positions, but really everything with him is always come down to the hitting ability, and ranked in the number one international prospect that year, mostly because of the bat and some of the, you know, the power that he had. But certainly I don't think anybody including the Blue Jays, expected him to be basically totally annihilating Double-A and Triple-A pitching the way he has by the time he's 19 years old.
Now, Ben, we obviously, you mentioned Vlad was our number one international prospect coming out his international signing year. He was our number one prospect in the Appalachian League, number one prospect in all of baseball now. So this is someone that we've now established is special, has projected to be special for some time now. But in your discussions with mostly opposing scouts, you know, because obviously everyone is always a little bit higher on their own guy internally. In your discussions with opposing scouts, how good, I mean, what level are they seeing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at?
I mean, I think everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but kind of impossible to miss the talent and the upside that he has, because there's just, he has so few holes as a hitter, which is incredible, because obviously you watch him take BP and, you know, I think he's always had big power. This year, I think the power jumped up a grade. So we're talking about a guy who's got 70 power, and given that he's 19 years old, we could be talking about a guy who may ultimately have 80 power. But what's so special about him is just what a complete hitter this guy is. And it doesn't matter if it's fastball, breaking ball, changeup. He can hit any type of pitch, any type of velocity, standing bat speed. But the plate coverage, the contact ability is so good, whether it's in, out, up, down. And then the strike zone discipline is such a separator for him, too. It's not just that he can hit every pitch. I mean, his dad could do that, too, obviously. But,
nose to toes, yep.
Yeah, but Vladdy Jr. doesn't just swing at everything. He has the strike zone discipline of somebody who's much, much, much older, much more advanced beyond his years. And, you know, I'm sure some of it goes back to, you know, playing in a lot of these games as a kid and playing in a lot of games as a kid against much older competition, and look, I'm sure a lot of it is just genetic gifts too. I mean, the Guerreros have a whole family full of baseball players, certainly not as talented as a junior, but the strike zone discipline, the pitch recognition is so good that, you know, when he does swing, he's rarely going to swing and miss. I mean, I think his strikeout rate this year was between Double-A and Triple-A is under 10%. And this is at an age where, like, you know, he spent a little time, I think, rehabbing in the Gulf Coast League this year. Like, you know, a 19-year-old actually, like, it's not uncommon to see a 19-year-old in the Gulf Coast League. Like, it seems crazy to have him in the Gulf Coast League. You know, obviously, it's a rehab purpose, but he just, you know, those are kind of the people who are his age, you know, his peers. You know, they are the South Atlantic League and Low A. But for him to be doing this at Double-A, Triple-A is just phenomenal. But it's, yeah, really the total offensive package. I think it's somebody who could be, I mean, it sounds outrageous, but I think he actually has a chance to be an 80 hitter with 80 power. He's just, you know, you can't miss the power, but the hitting ability is just such a complete hitter for any age, but especially for somebody who's only 19 years old.
What you're describing then is that basically makes him, if he does do that, that would be an Albert Pujols, that would be a Mike Trout hitter, not all around, but Mike Trout, that'd be a Miguel Cabrera, that'd be, you know.
And you know who's kind of the 80 power, 80 hit guy in today's game that doesn't get talked about enough is JD Martinez.
Yeah.
It's 340 with 45 to 50 bombs over a 162 game span. And all those guys, you know, Miguel Cabrera, Albert Pujols, at various, and JD Martinez at various points, they, you know, defense has been high or low. You know, Pujols when it was younger was fine, older, less so, but they could all hit. They're all elite hitters, and that made them elite ball players regardless of what else was going on in their game.
Yeah, and but that is kind of the question, Ben. You saw Vlad a good bit this year. You've talked to a lot of guys about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. over the years. If you're guessing, obviously he plays third base right now. How long do you think, I mean, do you think he's a long-term third baseman? Do you think he's a short-term third baseman? Do you think he's going to be moving really before he ever gets fully established as a big leaguer?
I think he has a chance to actually play it at least early on in his career, because, like, with him, so he has the arm. I mean, as an amateur, he did not. He had a below-average arm, and they moved him to the infield, and, like, his, you know, he had a different arm action, and the arm just played better from third base, and some of it, too, is, you know, you're scouting the guy when he's, you know, 14, 15, and signing him at 16. Like, your arm can continue to get stronger, especially probably if you're a member of the Guerrero family, where, I mean, it seems like everybody in that family has a good arm. Him, his dad, Gabby Guerrero, like, all these guys can, you know, throw. Gregory Guerrero, like, they all have pretty good arms. So the arm is increased. So the arm is, you know, he has the arm for third base. I think it's more a question of the range, because, I mean, the other thing I think that works well for him at third base is the hand-eye coordination, which is very obvious. Obviously something he has inherited from his dad, and is very obvious when you watch him at the plate. The hand-eye coordination, he very rarely swings and misses, and the ability to just track and recognize pitches. So I think that the hand, the coordination, and kind of body control, I think he does have that at third base. That does translate into the field. It's more a question of range and footwork for him. And I think, you know, the footwork has improved over the last few years and this season as well. And some of the, you know, the pre-pitch setup, certain, like, little things on, you know, how to approach certain angles to a ball, that's all improved. And I think that's, you know, when the Blue Jays, at least early in the season, were talking about how, you know, he does need to improve his defense, like, yeah, like, that is legitimate. And especially for a guy who, again, as an amateur, you know, maybe as a little kid, he played some infield, and I think he really enjoyed playing the infield. But he spent most of his time as an amateur, you know, training to sign as an outfielder. So it's not like he was one of these guys who at 14, 15 years old had some trainer or some coach hitting him 100 bungos a day. You know, he didn't really have that experience. And for a lot of guys who are really good hitters, like Vlad and other young hitters, they just focus a lot on their hitting. They don't really put a lot of time into their defense. I mean, you know, Bo Bichette is a shortstop. He probably was a lot of the same way, just from talking to him. So, you know, I think some of it just really depends on how his body goes, how big he gets. I mean, he's already a big guy at 19 years old. By the time he's 25, I don't think he's going to get any smaller. But I think just because a guy doesn't necessarily look the part doesn't necessarily mean he can't play third base, but I don't think he's ever going to be an above average defender. He might never really be, you know, I think he maybe has a chance to be an average defender, but probably just because of some of the range limitations comes in below that. But I do think that at least early on in his career, I do think that that he can play third base defensively at the major league level.
There's two things that jump out with that. One is, like, when you talk about his body, you mentioned we ran a photo in the magazine. It'll be with the story that goes, you know, that you can go to baseballamerica.com and read. We have a photo of Vlad Jr. from when he was 14. And one of the things that stands out is it's the same body, basically, not much different than it is now. The other is if you look at past history, guys were talking about, like, Jim Thome came up as a third baseman. Paul Konerko came up as he started a catcher but moved to third base, then moved to first base. Albert Pujols was a third baseman. And going back on kind of their history, those guys, like Pujols arrived as a 21-year-old and played left, right, third, and first. He played left and third primarily the next couple of years, and then by age 24, he was a full-time first baseman. Jim Thome came up, played third base. By age 25, he was a full-time first baseman. Paul Konerko, by age 24, I believe it was a full-time first baseman. These guys kind of have the history. The guys who are bigger, who kind of have this history, have a history of moving. But one of the things that stands out is that, again, it doesn't mean, you know, obviously Jim Thome is not a perfect comparison, him playing third for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. playing third. But the thing that does stand out is that most of these guys, when they move, it's kind of in that they kind of get, they arrive at the big leagues and then eventually they move, and it's usually about 24, 25. If Vladimir Guerrero Jr. moves at age 24, that could be in his fourth full pro season, you know, big league season, which that would be that he was a third baseman for a significant amount of time.
And I do think, we do need to point out that it was interesting. Some of the scout calls we made throughout the year, early on, I asked people, hey, so what do you think of Vlad at third base? And I think it's because their expectations were so low. A couple times I got, you know, he was actually a little better over there than I thought in terms of the hands, the arm, he can move a little bit. But a lot of those were pro scouts who were sitting on for, you know, a five-game set here or there. You know, Josh Norris, who's doing our Eastern League Top 20, is calling a lot of Eastern League managers who saw Vlad over the course of the entire season. And their overwhelming response so far has been, it's not good over there. You really shouldn't put him over there. Whether you say can or can't is strong, but, you know, it's not going to be good if you do. And even if you look at our grades on him in the top 100, we have a 40 on his defense at third base, which is, it's still on the major league scale. It's playable, but it's below average, and you don't want it there for very long.
And that was Jim Thome. Jim Thome was a 40 defender at third, who moved to first.
And I think what'll be interesting, and going back to the body, Ben, what I think is going to be interesting is, you know, we talk about Pujols, you talk about Miguel Cabrera, you talk about Jim Thome. We think of them in their later careers and the bodies they had. If you go back and look at them at 21, 22, they weren't as heavy. They weren't nearly as rotund as I think Vlad is now. So it'll be interesting to me to see, you know, whether or not Vlad, you mentioned the body's going to be a big part of it, and whether or not that third base, you mentioned early in his career, whether that's 1 year or if it's 3 to 4, because I do think it makes a difference. But at the same time, at the end of the day, if he does become a first base only like Frank Thomas, that's still a Hall of Fame bat you take. If it's a DH only and he's a right-handed version of David Ortiz, that's still one of the 10 most impactful players in baseball. So I will say,
You're more skeptical.
There's a lot more skepticism in some corners that he can play.
You're more skeptical.
I am, but even given that, he's such an elite bat, he's still going to be one of the 10 most impactful players in the major leagues.
What do you think, Ben?
If he has to move off the position? Or?
Yeah, if he moves off, do you think, I mean, again, is that going to make a difference or really not?
I think he could be a superstar at any position he plays. I do think he has, a chance to stay at third base. I mean, shoot, Pablo Sandoval played third base with that body well into his, even to his late
20s. Yeah.
Another guy with, like, very good hand-eye coordination, and obviously Sandoval was a catcher, and then I actually thought he could have caught, but they obviously had another pretty good catcher at some point after when they drafted Buster Posey. So, I wouldn't judge too much just off the body of my head. Gives me some concerns about the range limitations, and I think at some point, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, by the time Vlad's in his mid-20s, and maybe it comes even later than that, but, you know, at some point in his career, he's going to go, obviously, I think, over to first base, and, you know, depending on, some of it's probably going to be circumstantial, too, right, like whoever else the Jays have on their roster. Well, if you have a guy who's going to hit, to the projections that we have for him, you can feel very comfortable putting that guy at first base or even at DH if you need, and even the bat and offensive level that he's going to provide there could be an MVP type of guy.
Russ Martin's playing third, you know, a lot lately for the Blue Jays. So it's not like unless they make a move in the offseason, there's no one blocking him from playing third base in Toronto. But I do want us to get in also, like you said, it was an easy call. It was. But Kyle, there were other candidates. We didn't just say, okay, we're not even looking at this. So Kyle, who are some of the other guys that we looked at and we considered for the award?
The two main guys were Eloy Jimenez of the White Sox, went up to AAA this year and just mashed. He's always mashed every level. He did miss more time with injuries this year. That has been a perennial concern. But every time he's on the field, this is an elite, elite young hitter. And Alex Kirilloff with the Twins came back from Tommy John surgery, came back, hit nearly 350 above at low A, high A, 20 home runs, led the minors in total bases, led the minors in doubles. Really, Vlad was above and beyond. As we mentioned, we've had some, even in just my, this is my third one of these. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've had some meetings and rooms. We talked through it for an hour plus. This one was a pretty simple email chain. Yeah, it's Vlad.
I think the question was, okay, it seems like everyone's saying Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Is there anyone disagreeing? Okay, so it's unanimous. Okay, we and I should explain a little bit, like how we pick this. This goes back to Alan Simpson, the founder of the magazine and the founder of the website also. Like, Baseball America's Minor League Player of the Year is an award for a prospect who had the best year in the minors. And what I mean by that is that it is done with an eye on the future as well. A 27-year-old who has the best season in the minors by far is not going to win Baseball America's Minor League Player of the Year Award.
Especially if they're in Reno.
Right. But wherever they are, because they're not the best. Again, it doesn't mean we're not giving this award to the best prospect. In this case, it happens to be. It happens to be the last 2 years that the best prospect has won the award. Ronald Acuna was our number one coming into, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of drama. We'll talk, we have many discussions left to go, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is our number one prospect right now, and he's still going to be prospect eligible when the offseason rolls around. So it does happen like that. But you have to have, we look at it and say, who had the best season? And then we do weigh in, is this someone that we're going to be proud to have won the award a decade from now, 20 years from now? And again, our track record on that, we feel pretty good about. It's not perfect. Delmon Young, 2005, we're looking, at you. But it is something where we are always, when it comes down to it, going to look at it and say, who is the prospect who had the best year? This year, what made it easy is the player who had the best year in the minors was also the best prospect in the minors. When that happens,
it's pretty slam dunk.
It makes it a lot easier to decide. So obviously, the one of the things with that is we have, again, Eloy Jimenez would have been a great guy to win it. He had a...
And in a lot of other years, I think you look at the numbers he put up, he might have won it.
337, 384, 577 in 108 games between AA and AAA as a 21-year-old. He hit 22 home runs. Alex Kirilloff, as you mentioned. The thing that did stand out this year was...
There wasn't a great pitcher candidate at all. That was probably the biggest thing. You looked, even if you go into we mentioned those were a top three, Vlad, Eloy, Kirilloff in that order probably. Then you get into the, fours and fives, and, a guy like Nathaniel Lowe had a great year that you at least have to pay attention to.
Oh, absolutely.
Joe Adell getting up to AA at 19, hitting, 30 doubles, 20 homers, 15 stolen bases. Those are guys we were talking about. Even last year when it was Ronald Acuna running away, but you had Austin Hayes, you had John Duplantier go up and throw up the lowest ERA since Justin Verlander. And, oh, by the way, Corbin Burns put up a 1.6 mm-hmm. ERA. Where there wasn't a guy like that this year. Dylan Cease had a really good year. He's probably
12-2, 2.40, 160 strikeouts, 124 innings.
He's probably the best pitching prospect season we had, but it wasn't in the same realm as some other pitching prospects we've had of player of the year worthy standards.
Dylan Cease, Tukey Toussaint, Michael Kopech, who his ERA, 3.7 ERA is not great, but his... You look at his strikeouts. You look at the fact that he did it at his age in AA, AAA. Josh James was kind of the came out of nowhere again.
He was never in discussion for player
of
the year.
Right, but I'm saying, when we're talking about honoring great seasons, Josh James' season, 171 Ks, 114 innings in AAA in the PCL with a 3.23 ERA in the PCL, although that's a really good season, we've seen him in the big leagues. But again, this one was an easy one. This was, I mean, Ben, you've been a part of these a long time also. Can you remember any year that was close to this easy as far as making the decision?
No, no, not for minor league player of the year. This was, I mean, like you said, Lowe, Kirilloff, Peter Alonso, Eloy, or some other guys who had, it would have been, I think it would have been a much more interesting discussion had, like, Vlad not been here, actually.
Or if Vlad had not come back in the injury. I mean, because that's what he needed to get the at-bats was the big thing he had to do.
Yeah, that was, like, the only thing that, like, even made it remotely close, but otherwise his year when he was on the field was just so dominant in every way.
I think what going back to that dominant year, I mean, talking about his injury, one of the things that impressed me a lot was, you know, he missed a good month and he still hit 20 home runs, a career high. I think to me that was one of the most interesting developments, and we see that power comes later, but for him to miss that much time, and we see it all the time, hitters coming back from knee injuries, even when they're back, the power doesn't turn on right away. It takes a little bit to get it back. For him to still hit his career high 20 home runs, given that knee injury, I think to me, you mentioned, Ben, his power grade going up a tick. I think, look, we knew he was a great hitter. We knew he had great strikes on discipline. We knew he was special. Seeing that bump given the injury, I think to me is one of those things that maybe opened my eyebrows a little bit the most this year and further separated him in this Player of the Year discussion.
And BP, Ben, when you saw his BPs a lot, those were quite fun, weren't they?
Yeah, especially up in New Hampshire. They've got that hotel right beyond the left field, and he would just whack him off that wall. But, you know, even just beyond the power, the approach in BP, just the way to, you know, the way he drove the ball to the middle of the field, to right center field, and if you see him do that in games, too, where, all right, pitches on the outer third, just drives it to right field and, shoot, drives it out of the park to right field. You don't really see that from – I don't really see that from many hitters, period, but especially being 19 years old, having both the ability to manipulate the barrel and then just the strength, the bat speed, the power to knock it out of the yard to the opposite way.
Now, Ben, one other thing I wanted to ask you about with Vlad Guerrero Jr. is his makeup. This is someone who's been celebrated for a long time from very young age, son of a former big leaguer. You've had some interactions with him. You've seen a lot of him, how he interacts with teammates, coaches, etc. Just what's the sense you get on Vlad Jr. and his makeup and his personality as a 19-year-old?
Yeah, it's so this part didn't actually make it into the story just because, you know, there's only so much you can fit in there, but you know, a lot of times when you're an international scouting director or area scout in the Dominican Republic, you have concerns like, all right, what's going to happen after we give this 16-year-old kid $1 million, or in Vlad's case, you know, $3.9 million? Yeah. Are they gonna change, or are they gonna become, you know, super arrogant, or are they going to stop working hard now that they've got some money, or you know, all sorts of things can happen that gives a lot of scouts and directors a lot of concern sometimes when you're talking about giving a guy big money. And with Vlad, they just thought, you know, one, he's been around this his whole life. Like, money is not going to change him in any way. He's grown up with his dad, who's gonna, you know, go into the Hall of Fame one day. Having a big spotlight on him is not going to change him at all. Like, he's been around all these big league parks and been a, you know, he's been around this environment. So the Blue Jays felt very confident in his makeup. They knew him basically since he was a little kid. Their scout, you know, Luciano Del Rosario, had known him really since he was a little kid, so they knew him very well. And I think that was accurate report that the Blue Jays had on Vladdy. He's definitely a different type of guy than his father in terms of personality wise. Obviously, you saw him at the Winter League game last year, where he hit that, or it must have been a triple if I remember right, and started doing a little shimmy, a little dance around third base. So I think he probably tones that down in the minor leagues. He really enjoys playing there in winter ball in the Dominican Republic. But yeah, he's definitely got a big, big outgoing personality. I think teammates really like him. Has the ability to connect with a lot of people. More of an outgoing kind of personality, I think, than his dad had. But you know, and look, there's also a lot of reasons why, like, he would be right. And you know, JJ just, you know, you wrote about this the other day. Like, there's a lot of people who want to see Vlad Jr. up right now in the big leagues, and certainly he could go out and complain publicly about it. And you know, I don't think he'd necessarily be wrong to do so, but you know, he's just kind of kept, he hasn't really said anything about it. He sort of kept quiet about his whole situation. So showing you know, just some I think probably some maturity there as well.
The funny thing with that is, might be a way to wrap it up, is kind of look ahead, is that, you know, this spring, Ronald Acuna was, you know, again, stats in spring training are only, you know, minorly important, but the reality is Ronald Acuna was one of the best hitters in Florida this spring training, and then the Braves found some reasons that he needed to spend a few weeks in the minors so that Preston Tucker could play left field, who they then DFA'd not long after that. You know, it will be, I mean, again, we kind of can see the train coming. I would not be shocked at all if Guerrero is one of the best hitters in the Florida, you know, in the spring training in Florida this year, coming up in 2019. And Ben, I do think they're still going to probably figure out a way to figure out why he needs to spend 3 weeks in the minors so that Yonjervis Solarte or someone can play third base. I mean, that's the reality of what we live in baseball in the 21st century.
Yeah, no. We'll see how much. I think there's probably more now being written about this kind of stuff than ever before, and I do think that makes somewhat of a difference. But I don't know. There also was a lot being written about it when you know, the Cubs were manipulating Chris Bryant's service time, and you know, there was a good amount written with Ronald Acuna too. So yeah, Vlad, Eloy, I would expect both of these guys to have their service time manipulated by their clubs, and we'll probably see them a little bit later in April.
We're actually going to do a full podcast about that. There'll be probably the next Baseball America podcast talking about kind of the service time and all that. But again, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., our 2018 Minor League Player of the Year, a well-deserved honor, you know, easily the best hitter in the minors this year. We do want to remind you again, it's a great time to subscribe. Go to baseballamerica.com, click on shop, and you can subscribe to Baseball America. We've got Summer League Top 10s going out right now, but we are, before long, we'll be rolling out the League Top 20s. A lot of reporting going on for that. I think on the Carolina League now, I'm up to about reports on basically like 65 guys. I have to winnow that down to 20, but you start big and you winnow it down. But for Kyle, for Ben, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.